This is the Middle East Report, your connection to truthful reporting on Israel and the Middle East. I'm John Riley. The U.S.-Iran deal to end the war, what is that all about? Is that good for the United States? Is it good for Israel? What does all of this mean? Well, somebody who knows all about that and can unpack it is Rabbi Pesach Walicki, the executive director of Israel 365 Action and the author of Verses of Zion and Cup of Salvation. He has videos that he puts out on Israel 365, these short videos that are seen by thousands of people. And he is a regular contributor to the Jerusalem Post and Eric Stackelbeck's The Watchman Show and so much more. Rabbi Pesach, it is so good to have you here on the Middle East Report. Thank you for joining us today.
Great to be with you, John. Always an honor to be with you and your esteemed audience.
Pesach, so much going on right now in the Middle East, as there usually is, and we want to jump in here and try to unpack a little bit about what's going on with this Trump-Iran deal. Unpack this a little bit on what you're hearing there in Israel and what we know about this so-called Iran deal.
Well, John, in Israel, there's a lot of anxiety over this deal. There's a lot of worry about what it means. And let me explain. And this does not mean that the citizens of the state of Israel, that the state of Israel is in any way ungrateful for all the great things that President Trump has done. We can only shudder to think of the alternate reality had Kamala Harris won the election. So we are definitely grateful for everything President Trump has done. But we have to be very clear-eyed, John, about what this deal means. When I think back to February 28th, I think back to the beginning of this war when President Trump spoke to the American people that day announcing the launch of the military action. And he laid out the military objectives of the war. And he said that we're going to destroy their Navy. We're going to destroy their ballistic missile capability. We are going to make sure that they no longer are funding their proxy network of terrorism all over the world and all over the region. And he also said that we're going to make sure, of course, that they're never going to have a nuclear weapon. He then went on to speak directly to the members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the regime itself in Tehran. And he said to them that they must lay down their weapons or face certain death. And then he turned to the Iranian people. And he said, to the Iranian people, I say, the hour of your freedom is at hand. And then he told them to stay in their homes while the bombs were dropping because the U.S. was creating the conditions by which they would be able to take back their country, that they would be able to take to the streets and take back their country when the time was right, and that no other president had done this and that this was their big opportunity for their freedom after all these years of oppression under the Iranian regime. And I look back with great sadness at this speech because of all of those objectives, both the official military objectives, the four objectives I mentioned, as well as these other objectives that were said at the end about bringing the IRGC to heel and creating the conditions whereby the Iranian people could take back their country and gain their freedom. Very little of all of that has been accomplished, John. I guess the Navy was destroyed. The ballistic missile capabilities are still there. The nuclear issue, we're now being told, is going to be negotiated over the course of a 60-day period now. So we don't even know where that's going to end up. The proxy network is not only intact, but, and here is the most painful part that is making Israelis most anxious, is that President Trump is now throwing a lifeline quite directly to Hezbollah and Lebanon. Israel's been fighting Lebanon, trying to degrade Lebanon, trying to remove that threat from our northern border once and for all, and at the same time, do the dirty work that the Lebanese government is either unwilling or most likely just incapable of doing. The Lebanese people increasingly want to be freed from the grip of Iran and from Hezbollah that has been occupying their country for some four decades. And the only force willing and capable to do it, everyone knows, is the IDF. And here's President Trump, at the behest of the Iranians, pressuring Israel to back off of fighting Hezbollah in Lebanon. And this is very disturbing. It does not bode well. And what that means is that he's giving a lifeline to the very proxies that on February 28th, he said he was committed to dismantling. You know, Hezbollah is the largest and most significant of the Iranian arms, the Iranian proxies. They're not really a proxy. They're much more directly tied to the Iranian command structure, so they're not even really a proxy the way the Houthis and Hamas are. Hezbollah is much more the foreign legion of the Iranian regime, if you will. But nevertheless, the point remains, John, this deal has a very significant similarity to Trump's 20-point Gaza plan. And I'll bring you back all those months to when that was announced, and there was all this optimism, and this is wonderful, and Hamas is going to be dismantled and removed and disarmed, and the people of Gaza are going to, there's going to be this reconstruction plan of the new Gaza, and it's going to be peaceful, and it's going to be prosperous. And all of these grandiose plans were laid out, and Trump said that he had 13 different countries that all wanted to participate in the disarming of Hamas and the International Stabilization Force that would provide security there and peace with Israel. And almost none of that has been implemented for a very simple reason. The biggest, most difficult question, the question that matters most that Gaza plan was supposed to respond to was, how are we going to dismantle Hamas? How are we going to demilitarize the Gaza Strip? How are we going to disarm this terrorist organization so that they can no longer control that population and be a threat? And that question was the precondition to everything else in that plan. But if you read the Gaza 20-point plan, it does not explain whatsoever how that is supposed to be done. It leaves it deliberately vague. And I say deliberately because I think that we have a pattern here in how Trump's people, and I think about Witkoff and Kushner, maybe they're the drivers here because they were the drivers behind that deal as well, about how they come to agreements, that they look at the thorny issues and they say, well, the most difficult issues we can't agree upon now, but let's not let that stand in the way of making a deal. So let's push that on to a later phase. And let's find the, what are the things that we can agree on? And can we have a framework agreement to agree to continue speaking and provide a few confidence building measures at the outset that can make that happen? But what that does, that might work in real estate in New York where these guys are from. But when you're talking about these terrorist organizations and terrorist regimes, you can't take the main issue and put it for a later phase, because that later phase, as we saw in Gaza, that later phase may never come. And one of the things we know is, as I mentioned, that the whole issue of the enriched uranium and the nuclear issue is supposed to be negotiated over the course of some 60 days after this deal goes into effect. That's the whole big issue. That's the equivalent of the disarming of Hamas and Gaza. There's no definition given to that. There's very little chance that the Iranians and the Americans are going to come to some agreement about how that's to be handled. And we know what's going to happen. It'll be just like Gaza. They're going to be very loath to go back to fighting if this negotiation isn't working out. And you can't just walk away from that, John. This is a very dangerous deal. We're in danger of leaving the Iranian regime in power. And I think that their strategy worked. They knew that they were no match for the American military, and they probably made a calculation early on that all they need to do is make this as painful as possible for President Trump in terms of domestic politics, in terms of international affairs, spike in oil prices, and that if they managed to do that, they could get him to stop the war and stop short of achieving all of those lofty goals that he stated on February 28th. They closed the Strait of Hormuz. They prolonged things as much as they could. As soon as negotiations started, they just went into delay mode because they knew that the longer this goes on, the less patience the American people will have. And their strategy seems to have worked brilliantly.
We're talking to Rabbi Pesach Walicki, the executive director of Israel 365 Action. You can reach him if you go to Israel365.com, Israel365.com. Pesach, earlier you mentioned something that is absolutely troubling, is that this deal left Israel out. And you mentioned Hezbollah. Hezbollah is like having Iran on your doorstep. And Trump is like, nope, you can't fight Hezbollah. Get out of Lebanon. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. He said that multiple times to Israel. There was an exchange between Netanyahu and Trump, a profanity-laced thing that Trump said against the prime minister. I mean, it's just sad. And then just a few days ago, our president, the president of the United States, on the public stage said that Syria is better suited to defeat Hezbollah than Israel. I mean, this is crazy stuff, you know, from the White House. I'm like you. I appreciate everything that he's done for Israel, but we have to call it like it is.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you say that Israel was left out of the deal, I want to be very clear. When the deal was first announced, and I don't mean when it was announced on Sunday that they were going to be signing. I mean, a couple days before that, President Trump put out a Truth Social post when he first said that we've come to an agreement. And he mentioned a list of countries that he had spoken to who all approve of the deal. And in that list, he included Israel. And I found that very puzzling at the time. I didn't know it was in the deal yet, but I was like, Israel approved the deal. And sure enough, shortly thereafter, Prime Minister Netanyahu's office issued his official reaction. And the first line of that reaction was that Israel is not a party to this deal. So it was a very polite pushback, because he then went on to thank President Trump for all the hard work he's doing preventing Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. But he wanted to make it very clear to the world that Israel is not a party to this deal. Israel does not see itself as bound by this deal. And in Israel, the consensus, this is not a right-wing position or a left-wing position, the consensus in Israel since this deal was announced is that we must not feel ourselves bound by it. We need to defend our northern communities. We need to defend ourselves against Hezbollah. We need to deal with this jihadist, genocidal scourge that has been attacking our people and killing our people for decades. We have them on the ropes. This is the time to drive towards victory. Yes, there is some tension right now between the United States and Israel. John, Israel is also stronger and more independent than it's ever been before. And if we have to go it alone, we will. Let me pull back the camera a little bit more, John. I don't believe this deal is going to go anywhere. I don't believe this deal is ever going to reach the next phase. Because the way they've set it up is that, you know, similar to the Gaza 20-point reconstruction plan, where the main sticking point, the most difficult issue there, which was the disarming of Hamas, was deliberately left very vague. Doesn't say in that deal who's supposed to do it or how it's supposed to happen. It just says it'll happen. And sure enough, all the other big dreams of reconstructing Gaza and having a new government there and having peaceful coexistence and prosperity and all of the wonderful PowerPoint presentations that Jared Kushner showed everyone months ago, none of that is happening. Not a stitch of it. The Board of Peace, all of it. None of it is happening because Hamas is still there and no one's disarmed them and there's no real plan to disarm them. Because that's what happens when you take the most important issue and you kick it down the road because you want to make a deal and it's such a contentious issue, so you leave it out. You understand what they did here. They don't want to talk about the most difficult issue because then you won't have a deal. In this case, with Iran, the most difficult issue is what to do with the uranium and what to do about the nuclear issue. So what did they say? Well, we'll talk about that down the road. We'll talk about that in the next phase of this deal. Well, that's the most important and most contentious issue. There's no way they're going to come to an agreement on that. If the Iranians haven't given in until now under immense military pressure, why will they give in after they've been given sanctions relief, after they've been allowed to sell their oil for a few weeks and started replenishing their funds? As far as they're concerned, the way they see this war is not that they lost. They don't define winning and losing by amount of damage the way we do. To them, they were attacked by a far more formidable foe who said that he would destroy their regime, and they withstood that pressure. They were resilient, and now President Trump has backed off. They see themselves as the victors here, and there's no incentive whatsoever on their part to back off of their positions. And they've been adamant that they're not going to give in on the nuclear issue. You know, the pattern I'm seeing, and maybe it's the Kushner-Witkoff pattern, the people around President Trump, like they did in Gaza, they want to come to a framework agreement on some vague framework to continue talking that includes some confidence-building measures, and we'll deal with the tough stuff later. In Gaza, the next phases never came because the tough stuff was never dealt with. And I see the same thing unfolding here, John. I don't think this deal is going to make it to the 60-day mark. I don't think there's ever going to be the lofty goals that are being described about what's going to be accomplished here in peace, and there's going to be inspections, and the Americans are going to be able to take out the enriched uranium. I don't think any of that is ever going to happen.
What I'm seeing from news reports, and I'm just looking at a Fox News report here, PSOC, is that within the Trump administration, and this is a report again from Fox, that Rubio, Hegseth, and CIA director raised concerns about this deal. And it's interesting because they, both Rubio and Hegseth, have been kind of quiet about all of this. And the person that has been out on the front is J.D. Vance, Vice President J.D. Vance. So what do you make, make of that? Some division going on there in the administration, although they're not saying that. But from this report from Fox, Rubio, Hegseth, and CIA director raising concerns about the deal.
Well, it's actually in character. I mean, it's consistent with what we saw also at the beginning of the war. At the beginning of the war, it was J.D. Vance who was kind of not visible, and Marco Rubio was out there doing all the shows and explaining why we were doing this, as was Pete Hegseth. I think that we have camps within the people around President Trump, and we've known all along that Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner and J.D. Vance have always been more in favor of coming to some agreements. This all speaks to a lack of resolve about actually defeating evil. And I think that Marco Rubio and Pete Hegseth, both from the way they've been talking throughout this and from the way Marco Rubio also spoke about Iran as a senator, we know that he believes in the age-old value of defeating evil, the responsibility to defeat evil. You know, J.D. Vance said something very foolish the other day. He was being interviewed and he was defending these negotiations and this deal. And he said, you know, if you look back in history, World War II, World War I, every war ends with a negotiation. And I think millions of people who know history probably rolled their eyes when they heard that, because World War II ended with unconditional surrender by the Germans, by the Hirohito regime in Japan, by the Italians. The negotiation, you could say that, you know, they were negotiating what the unconditional surrender, you know, how it'll be implemented. But everyone knew that the Axis powers had lost. They admitted they lost. They were surrendering. That was the terms. And that's not what we have here. What we have here is throwing a lifeline to the Iranian regime, giving them a sense of victory. I think that Secretary of State Rubio is not on all the talk shows defending this, because I don't think he wants to defend it. But I think we do have camps around President Trump that are becoming very clear.
Well, we have a lot to be concerned about with this deal, that is for sure. And I know the president has said no United States money will flow, and yet there's talk about the sanctions relief and all of this, and that is money flowing into Iran. We're talking about a $300 billion fund to reconstruct Iran, not given by the United States, by Gulf countries. That's money flowing into Iran. It all sounds really, really crazy, and we absolutely need to pray for President Trump and the leadership team there. And, you know, as we wrap up things today, Pesach, I want to give you an opportunity to speak directly, you know, to those who love Israel, love the Jewish people, and they're as confused about this deal as I am and as you are, and concerned about it. And I want you to talk to those people who are listening right now who love Israel. You've been such an incredible bridge between Christians and Jews over the last many, many decades. And what would you tell those who are listening who love you, you're a rabbi, you're Jewish, love the state of Israel, you know, love the Jewish people?
I would say, let's remember that as people of faith, we know that the end of the story is good. How many bumps there are in the road and how bloody it may be getting to that good end, well, that's up to humanity. We make choices and there's consequences to those choices. But the end of the story is good. Israel will be fine. Israel will succeed. Israel will prosper. Of that we can be sure. So don't fret over that. And also in the more local, when we look at this deal, remember that the story's not over yet. The story is far from over. There will be many more twists and turns in this story. Every time, you know, throughout this entire process, it's been at times two steps forward and one step back, sometimes two steps back and one step forward. We can't overreact to the steps in the wrong direction. The story is far from over. God is still king. God is still he's still in control. And the nation of Israel is stronger than we've ever been. If you think back to October 7th and look at where we are now in terms of how degraded our enemies are on all fronts and how much stronger and more independent the state of Israel is in its ability to defeat its enemies and the prosperity that Israel is experiencing throughout all of this, which is just a divine miracle of the likes of which I can't even imagine, to think that we've been through all these wars and our stock market is higher than ever before. Israel is prosperous. Israel is strong. Israel will prevail in the end. We're having some problems here with the U.S. president. God has always told us not to put our trust in men, but to put our trust in him, and we will be fine. So keep praying for Israel, but most importantly, right now, I think you need to pray for America. You need to make sure that America makes, you know, the American leadership makes the right choices to align itself with, you know, with what is true and what is good. And hopefully we can have the resolve as a society, as a civilization, to defeat evil together.
Talking to Rabbi Pesach Walicki, the executive director of Israel 365 Action. And you can reach out to him at Israel365.com. You can watch his Eyes on Israel videos and so much more that he does. And, you know, you said so many amazing things there, Rabbi Pesach, about how obviously Israel has an incredibly strong military and is able to defend itself. But then, you know, you mentioned how beyond all of that, and most importantly, it is God, the God of Israel, that protects Israel, that is continuing to protect Israel. And over, Pesach, we've seen miracle after miracle happen there in Israel to the Jewish people, even in the midst of all of the things that you guys have been through. God has his hand on the Jewish people and on the land of Israel, and you guys aren't going anywhere.
Amen. That is absolutely true. Listen, as Mordechai said to Esther in the book of Esther, success and redemption will come to the people of Israel from somewhere else if you're not going to be the one to help us. You know, we will be fine. The guardian of Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. There is a, and that confidence runs through all of Israeli society. We're not worried. We're worried. We would like to be done with our enemies. We would like to have victory over them. And it's also important for all of civilization, John. You know, we are fighting what Islam is doing to the West, how it's taking over in Europe, how it's coming to America. And, you know, that those jihadists are not only the people who are taking over the streets of the UK. They're not only what's happening in certain parts of America where we see Islamic jihadists raising their heads on American soil. That's the same fight that we're fighting here in the Middle East against Iran, against Hezbollah, against Hamas. You know, the jihadists who are killing Christians in Nigeria and persecuting Christian communities there. This is all one worldwide struggle, and we need to see it in that context. Israel will prevail for ourselves, but in terms of saving Western civilization, saving Judeo-Christian civilization, we all have to take part in that.
Well, to put it into the perspective of the fact that we are fighting against evil, and we are, and you just laid it all out there. And for those of you who are listening here to the Middle East Report, you have to understand that. It is here on the doorsteps of the United States of America. We see it all over our country. We see it coming from New York. We even see it in Texas. We see it in Michigan. We see this radical Islamist agenda to do some bad stuff here in our country. And it is definitely a battle against good and evil, against the word of God, Pesach. And ultimately, that's what it is. You know, we know the enemy wants to try to wipe out the words of God, especially when it comes to the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Israel's gone, the Jewish people are gone, so the word of God is to no effect. That's just not going to happen, because that's not the God of Israel. We've seen God come through over and over for Israel and for the Jewish people, and he will continue to do that because his word is true and we can stand on the word of God. Pesach, thank you so much for all that you do, and I want to encourage people to connect with you because you've got videos and, you know, you got articles and a lot of things where people can connect. I don't know anybody else on the planet who can weave in the political stuff, weave in the Bible, weave in current stuff. I mean, you do it all. And I really appreciate your perspective. So how can people reach out to you and connect with you? Because, you know, you love the Christian community. You've been a bridge for so long.
Well, thank you, John. The best way to find all the content that I'm putting out is, first of all, to go to Israel 365 News on YouTube. Look for Israel 365 News channel. You can also look at my own personal YouTube channel where I'm uploading more and more material. Just look for my name. I'm the only person in the world named Pesach Walicki, so that makes me pretty easy to find. But also go over to Israel365Action.com, Israel365Action.com, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. And there you'll really get vital information about what's really going on with Israel in the Middle East and things that you can do to help, whether it's prayer or whether it's attending certain online events or giving you talking points or actions that you can take to help in this battle, not only for Israel, but for our civilization. So go to Israel365action.com and just, you know, sign up there. You cannot rely on truth about Israel and the Middle East coming to you through mainstream media. Of course, if you listen to John Reilly on American Family Radio on the Middle East Report, you're halfway there. You know, get plugged into everything we're doing. There's a lot of exciting programming and information that we're putting out on a daily basis. And I am also the host of a podcast called Shoulder to Shoulder that you could find on all podcast platforms. Please make sure to check that out.
As we wrap up this edition of the Middle East Report, there are a number of conservatives that are very concerned about this deal that President Trump made with Iran, including Senator Ted Cruz. This is what he said on his podcast.
This deal envisions funneling $300 billion to the Ayatollah and the Islamic regime in Iran. The folks trying to defend the deal, that they're saying that that cash would not be U.S. taxpayer money. Let me just read to you. I'm going to read verbatim from the agreement. Paragraph 6 begins as follows. The United States of America undertakes with regional partners to develop a definitive, mutually agreed plan with at least $300 billion for the reconstruction and economic development of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The mechanism for the implementation of this plan will be finalized as part of a final deal within 60 days. All requested licenses, waivers, and permissions needed for the relevant financial transactions will be granted by the United States of America. That is a commitment to ensure that Iran receives $300 billion. You know what? I don't care where it comes from. I don't want a lunatic religious fanatic who chants death to America to receive $300 billion, whether it comes from us or it comes from some other regional partners. I don't care where it comes from. Giving people who want to kill you the billions and billions of dollars from any source historically has proven an enormous mistake. Look, to put it in context, the biggest foreign policy mistake that Biden and Kamala Harris did is they flowed over $100 billion to Iran, and they used it to fund terrorism across the globe, to attack and kill Americans. And in a very real sense, Biden and Kamala Harris paid for the October 7th terror attacks through the money they flowed into Iran. The number this agreement is talking about is three times as large as what Biden and Harris flowed into Iran.
This deal that the president made with Iran should concern every American. That's the Middle East Report. I'm John Reilly. Thanks for listening. Get a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. We are on all the major podcast platforms. Just search for The Middle East Report, or you can go to AFR.net. Thanks for listening.